Todd, say hello and welcome. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Trombley and it's Seagatsoon. On today's show, I have the honor and the privilege of speaking with Wally Desjarlais from Buffalo Lake Métis Settlement. Welcome to the show, Wally.
Hey, good afternoon. Hello there, Daniel. it's great to be on the program. I'm so excited about this. Thank you for getting me to get on the show here and tell a little bit about my story.
And that's exactly what I'm most excited for, because Wally, as myself and many others know here at the Aboriginal Multimedia Society of Alberta, we all knew you, and of course we still know you, and you've made such a huge legacy within this company for Windspeaker, especially with your tenure that you've done here. So let's get things started. Let's start from the beginning. You know, can you talk a little bit about what life was like growing up in Buffalo Lake Métis Settlement?
Well, you know, growing up, we did not have the technology that we have today, right? So it was always out being with your cousins and, playing the games that I think kids don't even know what they are today, like, you know, kick the can and just all those, all that experience of growing up with your cousins because, you know, I've always said, your cousins become your best friends as you're growing up, and then you're still able to maintain that connection with them as you grow up and as life goes on, and they have kids and then they have grandchildren. So it's really changed. I mean, we're that generation now that once our elders are gone, I'm going to become that generation. I mean, that's how much time has flown since I was young. You know, the one thing that I really loved and got to know growing up was a little bit of our Métis culture, and as a lot of people out there. You know, when I was growing up, I was ashamed of who I was because I used to be called every name under the sun, being Indigenous. And at first, I had no idea what people were saying. Like, I'll say this, and I don't know if it will be able to make it on, but I was called a wagon burner one time, and I went in and I, you know, smiled at my mom and just like saying, oh, this one guy just called me a wagon burner outside, and having no idea what that meant until I was told. And that just, wow. That there, right there, it made me stop and realize who I really was. And that just closed things up inside, and I was really ashamed. And never had done anything to support or promote my culture that way. It's just the way that we were brought up at that time. But the one thing that I honestly can say that helped me through that was learning how to dance. And what I mean by dance, Métis dancing. When we were in elementary school, and I give credit to one of our members here on the settlement, who's one of our elders, Florence Delorme, for teaching me how to jig. Because we had nothing else to do in the community. So they thought, well, why not we do something like this just to get the kids out and getting them to learn a little bit about their culture. So we did that. So I credit her for teaching me not just how to do the Red River Jig, but I mean, we did all these different types of dances and different reels, like the reel of eight, the reel of four, the duck dance, the drops of brandy. I mean, we learned all those dances growing up. And, you know, when we were young, we were so proud to be out there to showcase our culture. And that's when I would feel proud of who I was, because I had been able to pick up dancing and doing the jig just like I knew how to, because my grandmother, my cookum, was an incredible dancer, as was my dad. I mean, jigging was, and dancing was big on my dad's side of the family, which I never really got to grow up with because my dad passed away when I was 4 years old. Talking with my aunt, she told me that when they were growing up, they would haul out all of the furniture out of the house, living room and kitchen, and my mushroom would have dances there. And my aunt said, at the time, we didn't have phones. So she goes, how people knew about it? She goes, I don't know, because it was always on short notice. But she said people from all around would come to my mushroom and cookums to come dance. And she said at the time, no alcohol. There was no alcohol involved. It was just people getting out there and dancing and doing all these reels and the Charleston and all these wonderful dances that I vaguely remember seeing my grandma do. Because by the time I was, you know, visiting my dad's family, my cookum was already getting up there, so she wasn't dancing like she used to. But it's just the stories that I hear from family that makes me proud today to be who I am as a Métis man. And, you know, with all of that, and through the years of my work, I really had been able to relate not only to my culture, but First Nations culture as well, because my grandmother, my dad's side is First Nations, and so she's status. And so just getting to learn a little bit about my First Nations side through my uncle, who was taught a lot about the medicines through my grandmother. And, you know, with him, the help from him, I'd been able to understand a little bit more about the medicines that we use. And I was always thinking that the medicines were so bad, but I can honestly say, like, as somebody today who is living with a severe disability, I've got diabetic neuropathy, which is probably one of the most painful experiences that anyone could have, because it doesn't go away. It stays with you right till the end. The only thing that they can do is just help you manage the pain the best that they possibly can to get it to somewhat have a level that is bearable for you. And with that, going back to the medicines, that's when I started using traditional medicines, using bear grease. That was not only gifted to me by my cousin's husband, who have been tremendous supporters with my recovery efforts, but my uncle, who had given me these medicines. And as he was writing down how to use them, it was all through my grandmother's teachings, and that's how he would end it, by saying, this was, you know, your grandmother's teachings, which just made me felt so much honored and privileged to know a little bit more about my grandmother and, or my cookum, I should say, for passing on traditions on to him. And then now he is someone that we go to whenever we need to talk about what we've got going on, and just really changed my whole outlook on life. It really has.
Can you talk about, like, what inspired you to give that spark of, you know, hey, I'm going to go into the world of radio, and when you heard about CFWE, you wanted to apply for it. Can you talk about that whole process that led you into a beautiful career with CFWE?
Okay, well, at the time, CFWE had a 3-hour slot time on CBC, used to be for just an hour from 6 to 7. Then it went from 6 till 9. And when I was hearing that and when I was hearing the music of indigenous artists, I thought, wow. I was so amazed and impressed by what I was hearing, and I'm going, an Aboriginal station in town? Because they were in Lac La Biche at that time. And riding the bus, I mean, we would be on the bus for about at least a good hour and a half before we got off at home. But the radio was on. But at the time when CFWE was broadcasting in Lac La Biche, once you left town, that was it. You lost signal.
It was on 10 watts, yeah?
Yeah. It was just listening to other stations. I was just so inspired as to what I was hearing and then wondered how were they able to create what you're hearing on the radio, what goes on behind the scenes. That's what I was so fascinated about. And then in grade 11, we had to do a workshop program as one of our options. And so I took the work experience, and I was taking a look at the list of all the businesses that were involved. There was CFWE Radio. I instantly checked that. That was the only check mark that I made. We were supposed to make three. And I told them, that's the one I want. They said, but you're supposed to have three. I said, that's the one I want. And I got it. So I was actually in grade 11 when I had started working with CFWE.
Wow.
I was doing my work experience, you know, for that first year. The second year, in high school, I only went half a semester to get all my credits, so I did that. And then when I was done, I thought, and this was just after I graduated too, I thought, what am I going to do? I thought, I'm going to go to Nate and apply for the television and arts program that they had there. And so I got my application. I was getting things ready. And then our program director at the time, who was Ray Fox, had approached me and asked, you know, what I was going to be doing when I had finished school. And I told him, I said, well, I would like to apply to go to school in Edmonton for the radio and arts program at Nate. And he goes, really? He goes, because he goes, you know everything. You know what to do. He goes, you're going to be going to a school that's basically going to teach you what you've been taught over these past couple of years, and offered me a full-time position. And then when CFWE had packed up and made the move back to Edmonton in 1993, I, at the time, just wasn't ready yet to make that move. So I stayed back. And when I went back to made that move to Edmonton, I happened to call up the program director there at the time to see if they had any positions available, and it was just all in my favor. They had a position available that they were looking for. So, I mean, it kind of just all fell into my lap. But, I mean, the more that was put on, the better it was for me, because I know what I was doing was helping to showcase our Métis, First Nations, Inuit brothers and sisters out there that have this amazing vocal talent that just was not being heard. And back in the day, yeah, we used to be made fun of. But who's the one laughing today?
Top way.
I mean, look how far the station has come, and I'm just really overwhelmed to be part of that journey right from day one. And, you know, and I give credit to Bert for allowing me to be able to do that. You know, just being and growing up on a Métis settlement, gave me that much more of a connection with our listeners, because we were broadcasting to people who were out already still living on, you know, the reserves or the settlements, and just, you know, telling stories of, you know, what we did and having to haul in wood and going emptying the old slop pail.
Yep, that's true, yep.
Was something that they could all relate to, right? But you would say it in a jokingly way.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we did. I mean, that's what we grew up with. Mm-hmm. And when you tell that to the kids nowadays, they just look at it like, oh, my God, you went inside that. Well, you try telling me that if you had no running water or had to haul water in.
That was Wally Desjardins from Buffalo Lake Métis Settlement. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Dana Barker Tremblay. Next, I continue my conversation with Clarence Wolfleg from Siksika Nation. As an elder such as yourself and a knowledge keeper such as yourself, you know, with the times that we're now in, we're often now seeing a rise of calls of local state of emergencies. As of you might have heard, Mikisew Cree First Nation announced a local state of emergency due to the fact of the high rising of mental health issues that they're facing with attempts of suicide or suicide within their nations. And Mikisew isn't the only one that's happening across Turtle Island. As an elder, what would you suggest that can be done to help, to relieve of all of this negativity, to better everyone's mental health state, as well as, you know, for the future, for all future generations to come, including to help heal the nations that are across Turtle Island?
Well, I think we got to wean ourselves from the issue of colonization, because even us were part of this continuing this colonizing way of dealing with our people, especially our young people. I know there's reserves like Cowessess, they're doing everything on their own. They're not following what the government or Indian Affairs is telling them to do. So they went out and they just said, no, we're going to do it our way. And sure, they may not have the funding, but they have a way of getting things going. So what I'm thinking is, young people, because there's not many jobs on the reserve. The biggest employer is the schools and the administration. But other than that, people venture out to the cities and they fall into the wrong hands. And they don't know what they're taking in their cities. They just want to get a peace of mind. They just want to forget about the things that they can't get. They can't get ahead, and there's no support. So I believe the communities have to come together and say, we can do it. Call it. We got to decolonize ourselves. We're always looking in a one-way direction. It's those people's fault. No, we're part of that. We accepted that. Now we have to find out what we don't need so we can start having an independent way of doing things, or even the issue of governance. I used to say the residential schools are no longer there, but our administrations, our leaders are still operating like residential school. So I believe we have to get out of that. And then the people see there's a different way that a leadership and a community are going ahead. They're becoming very close to the people. And a lot of times it's only to get a few votes and go ahead. I spent 20 years there, and it's very frustrating trying to say, no, we got to do it our way. And like it's the old withhold the rations mentality. Well, if we don't do it, we're not going to get any rations. And that's what equates to financial resources. And you have to take risks. You have to say, no, yeah, we're going to get a response from the government, but they're not here. They're not going to solve these problems for us. They're our problem. These are our children. These are our young people. We have to, and then we're doing ours, what we're doing as spiritual people, to sit with them, to guide them, to tell them the stories, the beautiful stories of our ancestors, and to do ceremony to cleanse them and have sweat lodges, all this stuff. And we're doing our part, but families got to start showing their support system rather than just saying, oh, he'll never lead to nothing. No, I take myself. I went through a lot of things, but I didn't give up. You got to show if it's sad or bad, find some happiness in it, and you'll do okay. Just go for it. Take risks. Don't hesitate. So I think those are the things that we need to work as a community together and share it with other communities, you know, innovative ways we're trying to get to these young people. But I just got a text from an elder in the Bloods. They say they're selling horse tranquilizers on the street now. Oh, wow. Those are very powerful pills, and there's no way you can counteract them. And, oh, that's scary, because even we share information like that between traditional people so we can spread the word. Says, you be careful of this thing that's on the street. This stuff is tough, but this stuff is even more scary. So those are just some of my thoughts on what you asked me.
And, you know, Clarence, I also have to ask as well is, you know, in ties with the question I asked previously is when it comes to, because I was asked this when I was a panelist speaker for Rupert's Land Institute here in Edmonton at the Expo Center. And I was asked by the MC, he goes, how can not only the young generation, how can we connect with our elders and how can we connect with their teachings and everything else? And I was kind of, you know, I didn't know how to answer that question at first, but then I said, well, first of all, listen to Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network. And two, the simple fact is just sit down with an elder, sit down and talk with such as yourself or anybody. And that's what I also highly encourage, because you can also gain huge life advice. And so what would some of your life advices be towards not only the young generation, but also to anybody that will listen to Voices of Our People?
Well, you know, right now, our younger people, I'll use my granddaughter, who's, 6 years old, 7 years old, and all these young people grow up with technology, iPads and those things, what do you call it, Bluetooth stuff. You know, we got to start using those to, like you say, and the media, like Windspeaker, and to be able to record some of the directions, some of the stories of the elders. Our radio station at 6 o'clock now is starting to bring in some people to talk, not just old people, but anybody that's interested to come and talk about what are they doing, what are they looking in life, where are they at, where are they working, is there anything you can share with the people? Because nobody visits anymore like we used to do when we were young. We always visit. So there's so much. Just going to Calgary is an everyday thing. We only go to Calgary twice in a year, Christmas and Stampede. Eh? So most of the time, we got so many things to do on the reserve. We're working. We're visiting with each other. I think you got to take the best of that and use the technology that you have, and to say, take a look at this. Here's an animated story of Napi. Here's a story that the elder's going to tell you. Listen to that person, you know. I may not, and to use the captions as they speak in a language. No, there'll be English words coming on. And we have those on TVs for people that can't hear, you know. So, well, I think we have to look at how we're going to use technology. And I'm very happy that we're doing this interview, because there'll be a lot of people that would say, gee, I never knew that, you know. Mm. And even some old people, they never got the chance to hear these stories. So, and I believe if we use the technology the way it's supposed to be used, not like some people use it to attack people, but use it for good things. Communication is such an important thing that we use. And traditionally, that is how we know, that's how we pattern our life and said, oh, gee, these stories are not just stories. They're about life. They're about setting your direction. They're about feeling good about who you are and be proud of who you are. So that's a few of the things I was thinking about.
And, you know, you were also touching on as well with the amazing advice that you just gave in regards to, you know, and I still did that even in my young life when, you know, my elders would come over to the house. The first thing I would do is get up, even at the age of like 8 years old. I would make them coffee. I'd say two cream, two sugar. That's how my mom, you know, she taught me all those ways, right? And sitting down and hearing it. And, you know, and I always asked growing up, like, can you teach me Cree? Can you teach me how to speak Nahuatl? And my mom would say no. And I didn't know at the time as I was young until I later found out she was also a survivor from residential school along with her sister and her brother, my aunt and uncle. And so, you know, when it comes to sitting down with elders, knowledge keepers, and indigenous influencers, that's what we like to do here for Voices of Our People. But the other thing I want to ask you is that, you know, I witnessed a beautiful video that you were a part of where you're standing near the Elbow River in the city of Calgary talking about what was there, what happened on those grounds where you were standing, of course, with the practices of medicine teachings and celebratory teachings. And of course, healing methods, and of course, the meanings of the Elbow River that connected to Banff, which, you know, provided, you know, medicinal ways of, you know, healing people through the water itself and the land and the herbs and even as much as the dandelions and everything. Can you talk a little bit about what people may not be realizing what they're actually standing on within the city of Calgary, where Blackfoot teachings once occurred?
Well, you know, when you talk about significant areas like rivers, before cities and urbanization came, our people used to travel through these areas, going to places where they gathered, where they needed the things they needed for their communities, and also some of their medicines, the food, you know. Then it gives these young people this was a beautiful place to be. We had everything here. Well, all we had to do was camp in places, and wherever they camped, they named that location. This is what it's called, and it's you like I say. Some people talk about treaty making. You know, that's a big part of our protocol with everything, even between each other. Is making treaty. We offer the tobacco and say, Creator, I do need this, and I only take what I need. I know what to use it for. So I think having respect for beautiful places like the river, you know, going out on a boat, catch a few fish. You don't need to eat them. You release them. It's just having that time to have peace and get all this stress out of your head and be a little more comfortable. I think that's what I was thinking about when they told me, could you talk about the Elbow River and what is it about? And boy, I didn't take me long to mind picture of this area the way the old people used to tell the stories. And I also traveled some of the rivers, and I also participated in some, you might say, trips out into the open land. So I believe it's when some people take a walk along the river, and it's a peaceful thing just to sit there, listen to the water, go upstream to Banff, camp out. You know, those are the things we did anyway. So before all this people populated and monetary and they're paying for everything, you don't have to pay for everything. You'll just enjoy what you have, even in your home communities. Just go out and say, Grandpa, could you tell me about this place where we live? And boy, those old people's eyes, they just shine, gleam up and say, oh, geez, thank you. Now I get to reminisce about my childhood days. And a lot of old people really brings a lot of life to them to be able to talk about the land as it used to be. It's changed. They know that. But just to reminisce about the happy times and the message they give, enjoy what you have and be proud of who you are, because we will never cease to be who we are, and take time. And so that's what I was thinking about when I was talking about it. It's a very good way to get peace of mind, to get your energy back. And so those are the things I wanted to convey to you, especially to the young people.
That was Clarence Wolfling from Siksika Nation on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Wally Desjarlais and Clarence Wolfling. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.